science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Stefan Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country. Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter will remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and the Pris will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting Pris will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multipurpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the space station assembly, maintenance, and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yi Sa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yi Sa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild. A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Sroa turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Sroa recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure, deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries, it consists of two parts. The upper part, is 55 centimeter high, with a zoon, a vessel used in ancient times, on top of the head. The lower part is 60 centimeter in size, with kneeling posture. Similar findings in the past were just 20 centimeters in their heights. The bronze figure was discovered under massive ivory objects. So far, over 500 objects, including ivory, bronze, gold, and jade ware, have been found from six sacrificial pits of the Sanjiangdu ruins. A Chinese man becomes the first blind Asian mountaineer to successfully scale the world's tallest peak, the Mount Everest. Zhang Hong completed the 8,849-meter high Himalayan feat with three high-altitude guides. The 46-year-old climber said he spent much of his trek holding onto his guide's arm. The pair said the most tiresome and risky areas were the so-called death zones, ice walls, and ice falls at around 8,000 meters. The Chinese climber recalled humbly embracing being part of Mother Nature after he completed his arduous journey.
No matter if you're disabled or normal, whether you have lost your eyesight or you have no legs or hands, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a strong mind, you can always complete anything that other people think you can't.
Zhang added that this is only the beginning. He said his next milestone is climbing the highest peaks from the world's continents, known as the Seven Summits. The Chinese mountaineer lost his eyesight at the age of 21. After his success, he became the third visually impaired person to ever step foot on the Everest peak. Russian company has developed a fully self-driving car that looks like it was taken right out of a sci-fi movie. Flip is the size of a conventional passenger car and has enough space for six people. Its creator says the advanced vehicle is a taxi of the future. Flip has fulfilled the requirements of international automated driving standards. It's powered by electricity, but it can also use other fuels like gas and hydrogen. The owners of this futuristic vehicle do not have to worry about running out of power. That's because its replaceable batteries can be changed in less than 5 minutes once they are out of electricity. A rare baby giraffe is born in a zoo in western France, as conservationists try to increase the population of this endangered species. The cute Rothschild giraffe is the second born in a French zoo this year. Caretakers say the cubs will stay with the facility for 1 year before they would be sent to another site to start their own families. The Rothschild giraffes are critically endangered, and conservationists say that only 1,600 of them exist now. The general giraffe populations in the wild have also decreased by around 30% in the last three decades.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
For many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Nepali man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kami Rita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for a small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal.
Now, the iconic Eiffel Tower in Paris has been illuminated for the first time using electricity produced from certified renewable hydrogen. In an amazing show, hydrogen-generated lights were projected onto the tower's frames, displaying various patterns and designs, making viewers ecstatic. It's a dream project of a French company based in the city of Saint-Malo. The company wanted to make the most recognizable landmark a showcase for its carbon-free technology. The objective is to bring more awareness of renewable energy to the public. The nightly event will continue until May the 30th. Countries around the world are investing a lot to develop hydrogen-related technologies. A French musician helps patients in an end-of-life care home to escape from pain by playing the cello for them. Let's have a listen.
Music soothes pain as music eases their symptoms. In palliative care, in end-of-life care, there is sometimes still pain in spite of the morphine, in spite of the drugs that really help manage the pain of the patients. They still feel pain, and music really has a calming power on the residual pain of palliative care patients.
The sound of Claire Oppert's solo cello resonates through the rooms of Jean Garnier end-of-life care home in southern Paris on Fridays. She plays for patients who suffer from physical pain as well as terminal illnesses. The center's staff say music lightens patients' moods and puts them in a calm state.
After Claire leaves the room, we find the patients in a calm state, at times moved, at times happy. A lot happens. There are moments of tears, moments of joy. When we go into the room, we find there is an encounter with the person and his or her story.
I'm in permanent pain. The music helps a little to escape from the pain, I think. You pay attention to the music, and if it's a piece you know, you anticipate the next note. There you go, it's like that.
Claire has been playing the cello for patients in end-of-life care for almost a decade. She says the fact that music makes people feel good has been known since the beginning of humanity, but today it needs to be proven scientifically. Therefore, she has made it her mission to demonstrate the therapeutic effects of music on patients by taking medical studies.
The Russian zoo is delighted to welcome a new resident, a rare snow white wallaby. The cute Joey named Elisa was born at Regina Zoo in the southwestern city of Kazan. Zookeepers say she is healthy, playful, and has won the visitors' attention. Interestingly enough, Elisa's brother Alec was born with normal pigmentation. Wallabies are members of the kangaroo family. The albino wallaby, which has no skin pigmentation and pink eyes, is believed to be extremely rare.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Imam Khomeini's best substitute. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. The enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran thought that with Imam Khomeini's passing away, the Islamic revolution would perish. But they didn't know that Ayatollah Khamenei is the student of Imam Khomeini and has been trained in the school of that unmatched leader. Now, 32 years after the departure of Imam Khomeini, even the enemies of the Islamic revolution admit that Ayatollah Khamenei has guided the revolution and the Islamic Republic of Iran in the best way. Ayatollah Khamenei has turned Iran to the most secure country in West Asia, despite myriads of plots that have been hatched by the avowed enemies of the Islamic system. The former U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, said that Ayatollah Khamenei is able to thwart the schemes which the best minds have designed, with spending the highest budgets in a very long time, and the skilled people have implemented with 1 hour speech. Imam Khomeini used to emphasize that Ayatollah Khamenei is the most qualified person for leadership of the Islamic revolution. Once he said, "Find a person like Mr. Khamenei who is committed to and in service of Islam and feels wholeheartedly to serve this nation. You cannot find. I know him for long years." The Imam wrote in a letter to Ayatollah Khamenei, "As I have been in close contact with you since the pre-revolution years, and this contact remains to date, I consider you as one of the able arms of the Islamic Republic, and I know that among the friends and devotees to Islam and Islamic fundamentals, you are among the rare persons who shine like the sun." Dear listeners, Ayatollah Khamenei's strong faith in God and his trust in God's promises are very outstanding. Secretary General of the Lebanese anti-terrorist legendary movement Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, says, "As for the things that I think are among his prominent characteristics is the high trust of Imam Khamenei in Almighty God. That you take over a responsibility as great as that of Imam Khamenei in administration of the Islamic Republic, leadership of the Ummah, confronting the US, the rebels of planet Earth and arrogant of the world, and support the downtrodden and the oppressed, to go on the toughest battlefront saying, I trust in God, while you really trust if Ayatollah Khamenei had not reached such a great degree of trust in God, he could not have transferred it to others." Among Ayatollah Khamenei's exemplary characteristics in the field of policy are his recognition of enemy and political acumen. He has a high mastery of the issues of the region and the world. He's quite aware of the schemes of the enemies for the region. He is very kind toward the Islamic countries and very harsh with enemies. The leader is strongly against division among Islamic sects and fully supports the cause of Palestine and any other freedom-seeking movement on planet Earth. Just like Imam Khomeini, he never trusts in the words and promises of domineering powers. Like his teacher and beloved Imam, he never considers religion separate from politics. Ayatollah Khamenei incessantly supports the oppressed and fights the oppressors. Russian President Vladimir Putin wrote in his memoirs after visiting Ayatollah Khamenei, When I visited Ayatollah Khamenei, I saw all the merits that have been written about Prophet Jesus, and all those merits were personified for me. There is a great sage in Iran whom I didn't think to be this much holistic in views. He is a sage and a scholar who decides and regulates Iran's policy, and with his ample acumen and intelligence, Iran will face no danger. In meeting him, I realized the real meaning of the Constitution of the Islamic Republic, the meaning of velayat-e-faqih, of religious scholars that I had heard. Dear friends, Ayatollah Khamenei always considers himself as the servant of people and keeps advising the officials to address the problems of people and try to live like them. He leads a very simple life and has always prevented his children from taking over any political or economic position and responsibility. Thus, his children are just engaged in teaching and research in academic centers and living simple life. Ayatollah Khamenei supports people like a loving father. For instance, with the outbreak of coronavirus in the country, he told people that this is a divine test and we should have patience and help each other to overcome this problem. Since the very beginning of the epidemic, he has recommended the people to fully observe the instructions of the health ministry and officials. He called on the people to avoid unnecessary travels and wear masks in public. He also urged all institutions to cooperate with the health ministry to rein in the disease. From the very first days, the leader asked for people's sympathy with the families and jobs which have been affected by the epidemic. Hence, he urged formation of the nationwide faithful assistance plan to help the needy and the strata that have been beleaguered by the coronavirus outbreak. Another prominent characteristic of the leader is his deep love for youth. He says, "Wherever we have trusted the young generation, we have advanced." He believes that employing the specialists, devoted and brave youth can remove all obstacles. The leader keeps meeting the youth from different walks of life and various fields of occupation. He says, "Dear ones, the youth period is the time of ability. Where should this ability be used? In my opinion, it should be mainly used in acquisition of knowledge, creation of purity of self, spirit of piety, and building of physical force, which is sport. These three issues are the main ones. If I am asked what I want from you youth, I will say education, self-purification, and sport. I think the youth should pursue these three characteristics."
We the people.
Taxpayer money for Israel.
The U.S. keeps providing billions of taxpayer dollars in foreign military aid to Israel. Almost all U.S. aid to Israel is now in the form of military assistance, know-how, and bombs, meant to target resistance from Palestine to Lebanon and beyond. But some evidence shows that the once sacred cow of U.S. funding for Israel is being questioned today in places like Congress. Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Mila Javamagi. With Israel inflicting a death count on the Palestinians, one question is, who is to blame? And whoever the other culprits may be, U.S. comes out on top.
An end to the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees, and emboldens the apartheid policies that Human Rights Watch has detailed thoroughly in their recent report.
Calls for an end to U.S. aid has been on top of the agenda for many pro-Palestinian activists inside the United States. That has been boosted since Israel announced the ceasefire after being met with heavy resistance from the Gaza Strip and the rest of the occupied lands. Retaliatory attacks by the Hamas resistance movement was in response to Tel Aviv's aggression.
بسنة 67 أول بيت استولت عليه الجماعات الصهيونية بعد الحرب بخمس أشهر شهر 11/67 استولوا على أول بيت بالحي وهو بيت عائلة الشنطة.
The latest round of tensions kicked off over the Zionist regime's expansive policies, in part involving eviction of Palestinians from the good city's Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. With Israel's brutality laying bare again, human rights activists got engaged in raising awareness about U.S. support for Israel. Our first guest is Dr. Ahlam Mohtaseb, professor at Media Studies at California State University, San Bernardino. She's also the director of the Center for the Study of Muslim and Arab Worlds. Dr. Mohtaseb, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for accepting our invitation. How do you think the U.S. aid to Israel is justified as necessary for the American people, despite atrocities by Israel against Palestinians?
It's actually not justified. The problem is that most Americans don't know about that. They are in the dark when it comes to how their tax money is being used to support an oppressive racist regime like the Israeli one. So a lot of times when I have talks or panels, you know, around the country, like on Friday, I had a panel with Antioch University. When I mentioned the $3.8 billion of annual military aid to Israel, people in the audience were shocked. They were absolutely shocked. And one of them said, I want to investigate how I could withhold my tax money from being paid for oppressing another people.
Tel Aviv has once again failed in its war, and Palestinian resistance emerged victor. But military offensives by Israel is just one aspect of the Zionist regime's aggression against Palestinians. Israel's military aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip has been one go to action by the regime to pretend it is defending against what it calls terrorism by resistance groups like Hamas.
Terrorists launch rockets at civilians, launch rockets from schools and hospitals, putting kids at risk. They use humans as shields. Hamas is a terrorist organization, sworn to wiping out the only Jewish state on earth. And the House of Representatives previously declared it shall be the policy of the United States to officially and publicly condemn Hamas for violating the international law of armed conflict by exploiting civilians.
The so-called Israel right to self-defense has been the marketing strategy to pile up money among Israel lovers, including in the United States. In America, U.S. taxpayer money is sent to the Zionist regime to defend itself. After all, Israel has occupied a vast portion of the Muslim land, therefore could expect to have enemies in the region. Our next guest is Max Blumenthal, American journalist, author, blogger, and filmmaker. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Many thanks for accepting our invitation. Mr. Blumenthal, the Israeli advanced military equipments, such as the Iron Dome, have at times failed against Palestinians' rockets. What does that mean in part for the U.S.-Israel military cooperation?
Well, I think one of the things that has been exposed here is the weaknesses of the Israeli military that has been constructed with American know-how, American weapons platforms, and based on a very American style of fighting. The Israeli F-15 exists primarily to attack families and civilians in the Gaza Strip. It was unable to suppress rocket fire. Israeli drones, Israel sort of pioneered the drones. They were ineffective as well.
The Gazans' resistance against Israel's iron hand later spread across all the occupied territories, where the Muslim population is fed up with Tel Aviv's crackdown and land grab. Tel Aviv's policies are funded by the United States and the pro-Israel Jewish lobby in the country. AIPAC is a favorite place for those seeking power in the U.S.
And I'm proud to say and be that among the many voices represented here, the California delegation is the largest and hopefully the loudest. There you go. So having grown up in the Bay Area, I fondly remember those Jewish National Fund boxes that we would use to collect donations to plant trees for Israel. Years later, when I visited Israel for the first time, I saw the fruits of that effort and the Israeli ingenuity that has truly made a desert bloom.
The U.S. money is spent on a various range of sectors, including the military and the intelligence, in order to take on Palestinian youths and families refusing to bow to Israel's expansive policies. In the latest aggression, the Israeli military came under fire globally over its crimes against Palestinians, especially those residing in Gaza, which has already been under crippling Israeli siege. But has Israel achieved anything?
Well, what we saw with this assault was Israel's failure to achieve any victories or goals or objectives of military significance. The Israeli army failed to kill any high-level Hamas commanders. It's always targeting Mohammed Deif, the chief of staff of the Al-Qassam brigades, and they can never get him. They failed to suppress rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. They failed to even prevent the factions in the Gaza Strip from hitting Israeli vehicles and tanks outside the frontiers of Gaza. And so instead, what they did was slaughter entire families, kill civilians as a means of attempting to deter Gaza from attacking. And it actually, all this does is create more unity among Palestinians, but it also highlights to Americans how Israel's right to defend itself is actually a right to exist outside of any international legal conventions, any human rights law, and to kill civilians as it wishes as a means to maintain its ethnically exclusive apartheid system, where these refugees in the Gaza Strip, 80% of the population are refugees, have to be maintained in a human warehouse as surplus humanity because they are not allowed to be part of a country that unfortunately brands itself as a Jewish state.
In retaliation for the Israeli regime's aggression, the skies over Israeli cities were lit up by thousands of rockets fired by Hamas and other Palestinian groups. The Israeli Iron Dome, for which a ton of money has been spent, has failed to protect Israel from Palestinian rage.
The Prime Minister also shared with me his appreciation for the Iron Dome system, which our nations developed together and which has saved lives of countless Israeli citizens, both Arab and Jew. I assured him of my full support to replenish Israel's Iron Dome system to ensure its defenses and security in the future. Over the last 11 days, I spoke with the Prime Minister 6 times.
For decades, billions of dollars in American military aid to Israel has been justified as necessary for the regime to crack down on Palestinians who want their occupied lands back. Many pro-Palestinian activists believe that the U.S. leaders must acknowledge it is the time to end polishing the armor of the regional bully. So what efforts are underway to raise awareness about the U.S. military aid to Israel and how it is spent against the Palestinians?
A lot of activist organizations and groups in the United States have been very, very active in educating Americans about those issues. So there are a lot of petitions being signed, especially from American Muslims for Palestine, Al-Auda, and similar organizations who have been actually pushing people to spread awareness through social media, mainly because this is our, the outlets that we can have access to in the United States. But also I have to admit that things are changing to a great extent, although the change is kind of slow, but it's very steady and it's happening. So look at the 12 Congress persons or congressmen and women who actually pushed Biden to take a more firm position against Israel and to actively get involved in having a ceasefire. And those are more on the side of what we call progressive Democrats.
The military tango between Israel and the U.S. means the regime must buy American equipment, and in exchange, Washington guarantees not to sell weapons to other West Asian countries that are more advanced than possessed by Israel. This way, the U.S. guarantees that Israel has a military superiority over Palestinians.
I want to just take a minute to discuss what's happening in Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza. We're deeply concerned about what we're seeing there. Images that came out overnight are harrowing. And the loss of any civilian life is a tragedy. I've asked Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Hadi Amer to go to the region immediately to meet with Israeli and Palestinian leaders. He will bring to bear his decades of experience, and in particular, he will urge on my behalf and on behalf of President Biden a de-escalation of violence. We are very focused on this. The United States remains committed to a two-state solution.
Palestinians have defied the odds and keep portraying their defensive might to Israel's war machine. Apart from military aid, the U.S. also invests in Israel every now and then, like $1.6 billion in U.S. funding, in addition to the yearly allocation for improvement and deployment of the Iron Dome.
The right of self-defense for Israel, the one-sided claim, is or has been a well-planned, normalized line in American policy and on American U.S. mainstream media. And this is very unfortunate because it totally erases power dynamics in the context of Palestine, that Israel is actually considered the fifth most powerful country in terms of its arms and its actually surveillance in industries and its military industries, and that it is actually inflicting a total war on mainly unarmed, Palestinian population, even in Gaza with Hamas rockets. I mean, the rockets that Hamas actually fires towards Israel are no comparison to the Israeli military and their use of the Iron Dome to intercept, of course, rockets, and the ability for them to use F-35, jets that are used only in the context of Gaza. So it's a ridiculous, line that unfortunately in the U.S. we are normalized to accept.
One of the most vocal critics of Israel is Palestinian-American Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who has been an outlier as Michigan representative in the Democratic Party over her pro-Palestine position. Tlaib brought the issue to the White House with tears in her eye over the deadly aggression on Gaza.
I want to read something a mother named Iman in Gaza wrote 2 days ago. She said, quote, "Tonight, I put the kids to sleep in our bedroom so that when we die together, and no one would live to mourn the loss of another one." The statement broke me a little more because of my country's policies and funding will deny this mother's right to see children live, her own children live without fear, and to grow old without painful trauma and violence.
But the apartheid crackdown is incrementally cracking, and the downward Israeli spiral could be clearly seen on the horizon with the resistance's preparedness and strong presence in Palestine. That comes despite U.S. full support for the Zionist regime, which today the government is struggling to justify.
The American public, and particularly progressives in the U.S. who opposed these assaults, saw what these weapons were doing. There was pressure on members of Congress to stop this arms sale. But prior to this assault, if this hadn't taken place, nothing would have been said or done about the arms sale. The U.S. public is very poorly informed about U.S. foreign policy, particularly in the Middle East and particularly as it relates to Palestine.
Israel must be held accountable for its war crimes, a stance also adopted by Muslim Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. One of the most flagrant violations by Israel is illegal construction of settlements for Israelis on Palestinian lands, something the regime has never stopped despite official pressure from other countries.
Under far-right ethno-nationalist leader Benjamin Netanyahu has legally razed Palestinian ancestral homes, leveled entire neighborhoods, and violently suppressed any resistance. This is all to make way for illegal Israeli settlement outposts designed to displace Palestinians from their homes and prevent a future Palestinian state.
Israeli settlements are built on the occupied Palestinian territories and are hence subject to the Geneva Conventions, which forbid construction on occupied lands. There are over 120 illegal settlements built since Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories in the West Bank in 1967. So does the Israeli version of the events make sense?
The Israeli story is not making any sense to many Americans anymore. I mean, people see the death in Gaza, the destruction. How can they justify the destruction of or damaging seven hospitals, for example? How can they justify shelling and basically destroying the only COVID clinic in Gaza? How can they justify killing 22 members of one family with one missile hit? How can they actually explain the killing of 12 little girls getting psychological treatment at a facility?
There are efforts on the way to shift the U.S. attitude in endorsing Tel Aviv militarily. Jewish Senator Bernie Sanders is among the top critics of regime in Congress. Sanders has pointed to the self-evident, suggesting that the U.S. treatment of the conflict is not even-handed.
Given the incredible suffering in Gaza, where we have a poverty rate of 56%, 70% of the young people are unemployed, and after the Israeli attacks, you have wastewater plants destroyed, clinics destroyed, hospitals destroyed. I think the United States has got to develop an even-handed approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We have to be pro-Israel, but we have to be pro-Palestinian, and I hope and believe the president understands that. And I was delighted to see that he is moving forward.
One could say that historically, the U.S. has not been pro-Israeli in its foreign policy, but rather anti-Muslim and anti-Palestinian. From the left to the right, liberals or conservatives, Democrats or Republicans, American politicians have always made sure their pledge to Israel is heard loud and clear. But that appears to be changing.
Young people oppose Israeli violence and Israeli brutality in much higher numbers than ever before. Especially progressive urban young people. The Arab immigrant population is becoming more outspoken and less afraid of being painted as terrorists, and so the youth are getting out in the streets. And people are just genuinely horrified by what they've been seeing on social media, including from English-speaking accounts of Palestinian residents of the Gaza Strip, showing what Israel's actually doing. It can be seen in a way that it hasn't before. And so people are voicing their outrage on a human rights basis.
Another outspoken figure speaking out against Israel is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. AOC has been leading an effort to block some military aid to Israel. Others joining her to block a sale of precision-guided weapons to Israel include Representative Rashida Tlaib, Mark Pocan, and Ilhan Omar.
And when I saw those airstrikes that are supported with U.S. funds, I could not help but wonder if our communities were practice for this. This is our business because we are playing a role in it, and the United States must acknowledge its role in the injustice and human rights violations of Palestinians.
Partisan jostling on Capitol Hill over U.S.-Israel relations has indeed escalated significantly. Whether or not a sale of Boeing-built arms guidance kit is blocked has a symbolic significance as the Biden administration tries to keep control of the situation and prevent U.S. politics from heating up.
The Israeli military and their use of the Iron Dome to intercept, of course, UNO rockets, and the ability for them to use F-35 jets that are used only in the context of Gaza. So it's a ridiculous, line that unfortunately in the U.S. we are normalized to accept. However, as I said before, things are changing. People are recognizing that Israel is the colonial power and it is colonizing and controlling Palestinians and their lives under brutal military occupation and hegemony.
Stay tuned for more.
All the Biden administration's attempts have failed, both to allegedly pressure the Israeli prime minister or keep the pro-Palestinian Shifton liberals on his own side. Israel continued its aggression regardless. From the get-go, the Biden administration indicated some indifference towards the conflict and just ignored Israel's atrocities.
Minister Prime Minister Netanyahu informed me that Israel has agreed to a mutual unconditional ceasefire to begin in less than 2 hours. The Egyptians have now informed us that Hamas and the other groups in Gaza have also agreed. In my conversation with President Netanyahu, I commended him for the decision to bring the current hostilities to a close within less than 11 days. I also emphasized what I've said throughout this conflict. The United States fully supports Israel's right to defend itself against indiscriminate rocket attacks from Hamas and other Gaza-based terrorist groups that have taken the lives of innocent civilians in Israel.
President Biden has been treading a fine line in trying to appeal to his base without making Israelis angry. Simultaneously dealing with both the opposing demands appears to have been on top of the agenda for the Democratic administration so far. That was our show.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The failure to contain COVID in the U.S. confirmed that U.S. approach to healthcare and public health is broken, and former President Donald Trump made a bad situation worse, says Mike Ludwig, reporter, in an article published under the heading, New Lancet Report Shows 40% of U.S. COVID deaths could have been avoided. Here's the details. If the United States had death rates on par with other wealthy nations, there would have been 40% fewer deaths attributed to COVID-19 last year. In 2018 alone, an estimated 461,000 fewer people would have died if the U.S. was as healthy as other countries. The failure to contain COVID in the U.S. confirmed that U.S. approach to health care and public health is broken. And former President Donald Trump made a bad situation worse. That's the message from a multidisciplinary commission of experts assembled to study the Trump administration by The Lancet, a longstanding medical journal that has publicly tussled with Trump over the course of the pandemic. Since 2017, the international team of 33 leading experts in clinical medicine, public health, epidemiology, community medicine, economics, nutrition, law, and politics has analyzed how the Trump administration's policies impact health. The result is a scathing and detailed new report that is an indictment of both Trump and a healthcare system that values profit over human life. The life expectancy in the U.S. began falling behind peers such as the United Kingdom, Germany, and France when Ronald Reagan became president in 1980. According to Kevin Grumbach, a professor of family and community medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and co-author of the report, that is the turning point where health started falling in the United States compared to other G7 nations, Grumbach said in an interview. We totally shifted to conservative and neoliberal policies, and that corresponds with a deteriorating health in the U.S. relative to other nations, he added. Reagan instated policies that reduced the government's role in health care and education and accelerated the concentration of wealth among the upper classes. Since then, life expectancy has dropped 3.4 years behind other wealthy countries and remains even lower among Black people and Native Americans. The report found that before the pandemic, rates of midlife mortality among Black people and Native Americans were 42 and 59% higher, respectively, than for white people. People of color are more likely to die from COVID than white people, and the mortality gap between Black and white people has grown by 50% during the pandemic. The disastrous bungled response to the pandemic made clear how existing, long-standing racial inequities simply have not been addressed, said Mary T. Bassett, director of the FXB Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard University and a member of the commission, in a statement recently. Reagan's neoliberal political philosophy stuck around under both Democratic and Republican administrators and created conditions for the rise of Trump. The report links health to trade liberalization that led to the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs, weakened unions, and left many parts of the U.S. to struggle economically. According to the report, Trump exploited anger among white voters over their deteriorating life prospects and stoked racism and nativism to win the 2016 election. That's the epidemic that we have been struggling through, not just through 4 years of Trump, but 40 years of failing to create the conditions that make for a wealthy and healthy society, Grumbach said. As soon as he took office, Trump and Republicans in Congress moved to destroy the Affordable Care Act, which expanded health insurance for the millions of American people. The GOP's signature achievement, a massive tax cut for wealthy nation, opened holes in the federal budget that conservatives used to justify spending cuts on health and food assistance. While attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act failed spectacularly in Congress, the Trump administration used its executive powers to undermine the law. During the first 3 years of Trump tenure, the number of people with health coverage dropped by 2.3 million, largely due to Trump's attacks on Medicaid, the program that provides health coverage to low-income people. About 760,000 kids and teens lost health coverage. Before the pandemic hit, the Trump administration proposed $920 billion in Medicaid cuts and was poised to require burdensome eligibility checks that would have pushed more people out of the program, according to the report. The Trump administration consistently favored corporate interests over public health. When it came to climate and environment, and openly worked on behalf of the fossil fuel industry. The administration rolled back dozens of environmental regulations, allowing companies to spew more dangerous pollution into the air. Between 2016 and 2019, the number of deaths related to environmental and occupation hazards spiked to 22,000 after years of steady decline, according to the report. The administration also repeatedly attempted to suppress data showing the effects that pollution has on human health. The list goes on, but the Trump administration's response to the pandemic stands out. Grombach said Trump had already cut staff at public health agencies by the time the pandemic hit, severely weakening the nation's response. Meanwhile, Trump consistently spread disinformation about COVID, providing a preview of his efforts to overturn the election he lost. Attempting to deflect blame for a botched COVID response, Trump attacked China and World Health Organization, even citing The Lancet in a blistering letter to the WHO. The Lancet editor stepped in and confirmed that Trump was lying. By October 2020, the U.S. had the highest death rates among 18 other high-income countries, both from COVID and other health problems. However, Grombach said the problems exposed by COVID are bigger than Trump. Behind Trump's bluster and weakness in the face of the virus is a neoliberal ideology that shapes American healthcare system and sets the U.S. apart from other nations. It's an ideology that values corporate profits over the lives of the vulnerable and sees healthcare as a commodity to be bought and sold rather than a human right. In such an environment, public health measures such as masking in public and providing healthcare to immigrants are subject to polarizing debates, even though they benefit everyone. The Lancet's commission concludes that simply returning to pre-Trump era policies will not be enough to protect health of American people. Grombach said the entire system needs an overhaul. For starters, the U.S. should transition to a single-payer healthcare system like those set up in nations that have better life expectancy. Polling shows that 56% of likely voters in the U.S. support Medicare for All, the single-payer proposal championed by Senator Bernie Sanders and other progressives. Support for a public option that would compete with private insurance is even higher, although many people support both.